Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to another Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, of course, Chris Martinson, and today we welcome Jeff Clark to the program. Jeff is Senior Precious Metals Analyst at Casey Research, where he serves as editor of their widely respected Big Gold newsletter. Now, I've invited Jeff on to discuss all things gold and silver, as there are a lot of questions swirling these days about the price direction. Are they poised to surge after a year-long consolidation phase, or have they topped out? What impact will future central bank actions have? If you bought silver at $49 last year, will you ever see that price again? We'll delve into these along with a revisitation of the fundamentals for owning the precious metals, if they've changed at all during this conversation, which I'm really looking forward to. Jeff, thank you so much for being our guest today.
I'm glad to be here, Chris. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with a piece from your bio at the Casey Research site, which states that you are the son of an award-winning gold panner and that you helped to work with your family's placer claims in California, Nevada, and Arizona. What sort of an award was that?
Well, my dad has been interested in gold mining for a long time, and that's been his full-time hobby, shall we say, mm-hmm. Since he's retired. And we do own placer claims in California, Nevada, and Arizona, and he's worked those over the years. And he's had some, you know, marginal success and that sort of thing, but nothing that's been really life-changing. But definitely have found lots of nuggets of gold and silver and that sort of thing. So, but the awardee one, they hold these contests where you're actually panning for gold, and they'll put a little bit of gold in the bottom of a giant, you know, half of a barrel type of contraption. And everybody pans for, and whoever finds the gold first, you know, wins type of thing. And he's never outright won, but he's always placed. And so it's a fun thing, and he's pretty good at it. And mm-hmm. So it's a fun thing that he does. He tends to be the one who gets out there and gets his hands dirty and likes to get out in the rivers and really search for it. And he's pretty good at it. I like to go with him just to get out of doors, but my interest really is more in making money. So,
all right. Well, there is gold mining somewhere in your DNA, as it were. Tell our listeners a little bit more about your background then, and how long you've been following the precious metals markets.
Well, it you know, pretty much runs in the blood, you might say. It runs in the family. Both my grandparents left me a little bit of gold and silver when they passed away. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it at the time that they had done this. And what was interesting is I actually received some, you know, some gold from one set of my grandparents, and it really made an impression on me. And the reason it did is because the gold would actually buy just as much today, at the time that I received the metal, as it would when they first bought it, you know, decades earlier. And that really made an impression on me. And so it's something that I've always, you know, had a liking toward. And I wouldn't call myself a gold bug, but I might say I'm a temporary gold bug. And the reasons I'm a temporary gold bug we can go into. But I do think it's something that people are going to need to own and have a good exposure to here. But it's something I've always had an interest in, and I've been with Casey Research since late 2007. I joined them just in time for the big market meltdown, so the timing couldn't have been better for me. So.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. So what form was that gold in that your grandparents left you? Was that coins?
Yeah, it was coins. Yeah, they left me some gold coins. And ironically, my one of my grandfathers actually bought me one of the first editions of the American Eagle when that first came out in 1986. So that was a really special coin to me to get. And it's just really interesting, you know, looking back at he kept some notes on what he paid for it and where he bought it and that sort of thing. And, you know, that gold coin, what he paid for it then, will buy me the same amount of goods and services here today in 2012 as it would in 1986. So it's really amazing to me how gold has really kept pace in terms of purchasing power, and that really made an impression on me.
Well, I'd like to start there. I've been a temporary gold bug as well, but I think it's 10 years of temporary at this point, and maybe it might last another 10. I honestly thought this period would be over a little bit sooner, but I want to start right at the very outside of this conversation then. I'd like to understand your views for why we would invest in gold at all, the main reasons that you have, one being you're impressed with its ability to preserve purchasing power. What other reasons do you have?
Well, the reasons that I'm buying gold and silver now are not just because I like gold bullion coins. The fundamental drivers right now and the fundamental reasons we should all be owning some gold and silver right now are, first of all, negative real interest rates. That's an environment that's very positive for gold. You can demonstrate that mm-hmm. throughout history very clearly. Any kind of weak or negative growth economy is a time where you'd want to own gold. We certainly have that. And in fact, the outlook for many economies worldwide is not terribly positive. So not only are we weak now, but there's a weak outlook. So that makes owning gold and silver here even more important. You know, one of the biggest reasons, though, of course, is the massive deficit spending that we've had, the runaway debt we have, and, all that can't be done for free. That's not consequence free. You don't get to do that forever without experiencing some kind of consequences. So, I mean, the Obama administration has spent roughly 50% more than they took in. And that's staggering to me. And you can only finance that one of two ways. One, you can borrow from foreigners, or you can run the printing press. And of course, the latter is just pure inflation. That's all it is. And that probably is the biggest reason that I own gold and silver now, is because of the ongoing currency dilution. I mean, the Fed is printing money, the European Central Bank is printing money, Japan is printing money, the UK, China, the Swiss, all these guys are adding to their balance sheets. All these roads lead to the same destination, and that's inflation. And at some point, I'm convinced there's going to be some pretty serious fallout with all this. And however all that fallout plays out, I want to own gold and silver. So for me, gold is more about protecting my purchasing power than it is about making a buck. You know, gold's not really an investment technically for me. That's what the stocks are for. Gold for me is more about money. And I think as people begin to view gold more as money, like it's been throughout millennium, then that answers the question about how much you should own and how you should view it.
Excellent. You know, I have one other piece I'd like to get your views on. Inflation is one thing that gold can protect against. I'm holding gold as well for, well, actually two other reasons. One is because of financial instability, gold being a monetary asset that's not simultaneously somebody else's liability. When I go to Europe, I find a lot of people are holding gold in Europe because they are frankly distrustful of institutions over there. If you're in Greece or Spain, you have obvious reasons for that, but maybe more broadly, there's still a large concern out there that we can't always know where the risks lie in these highly interconnected, complicated, and often intervened in markets. Do you have a view around that?
I think there is strong evidence that it is more important now to own the physical metal than it is an ETF. The ETF can serve a purpose. If you want to lay some kind of wager on the direction of the price, well, you can do that through an ETF. The ETFs are liquid. If you want to buy an option, you can use an ETF. So they serve a purpose. But you don't really own that gold. You can't, for all practical purposes, take delivery. So it's really critical, in my opinion. Look at what happened to MF Global. There's a good example.
Mm-hmm.
That tells you that you probably want to be more overweight the physical metal right now than you do an ETF. And again, gold is money. So as you view it more as money, you begin to realize that buying a gold coin is not just a pretty piece of history. It's actually something you can use to protect your standard of living.
Absolutely. I'm wondering now, you mentioned before that gold and silver are both legitimate investments here. We've been talking about gold. I'm just wondering if we could discuss silver for a second. Do you have a different rationale for holding silver, or is it fundamentally the same as gold?
Gold is, you know, the demand for gold is financial demand, period. silver is financial demand, but it's also part industrial consumption. So there is a scenario under which where gold could actually outperform silver. Many people think silver will outperform gold. That's probably going to be true. But there is a scenario which silver does poorly, and that would be where we get a very ugly economic situation combined with some kind of runaway inflation. If that happens, if we get a depression that's like that, then silver is going to be impacted, and it's not going to do as well as gold. So that's the reason we do recommend buying more gold than silver. Do I expect that to happen? Probably not. And I do think that silver is going to outperform gold by the time this is all over. But you do have to keep that point in mind that silver is part industrial consumption. I mean, at least half the metal that's dug up every year goes to some kind of industry, not to investment. So you need to keep that in mind when you're considering your investments.
Sure. I'm thinking about time horizons now. And before we talk the long horizon, where I have some interesting, I'd love to get your perspective on where silver is really going to go, considering depletion of known reserves and things like that. But hold that on the shelf for a second. The price action for gold and silver has been very range bound for over a year now. What are the reasons for that, in your opinion?
Well, the main reason is because we haven't had a new catalyst for either gold or silver. A lot of the catalysts that have driven the price as high as it's gone, and it's had a very good return. It's outperformed the S&P and a lot of other asset classes. But the reason it hasn't done much recently is because we haven't had a new catalyst. Negative real rates are very positive for gold and silver. Well, we've known that for some time now. That's been the case for a while. Weak economies, deficit spending, debts, even the money printing issue, a lot of that's built into the price now. So what's going to be needed, in my view, to take the price to the next level, which for me is going to be breaking the $2,000 barrier and then staying above it, is going to be some type of new catalyst, a black swan, which may not be fun, but it's those kinds of things that will probably drive the price to new highs. For me, that's going to be inflation. I think inflation is going to be the key driver going forward. I think, in fact, it catches a lot of people off guard. I think it's going to hurt a lot of people. And I think if you don't have, meaningful exposure to gold and silver before that kicks in, that, some people are going to get hurt. So there could be other catalysts as well. There could be some kind of surprise that we get in the market. But for me, it's probably going to be some kind of inflation.
All right. So let's imagine you've mentioned that you think people should have a core position in the physical metal itself. And then you'd briefly touched on this idea of stocks, which are more of an investment, potentially even a speculative play on the price of the metal itself. I'd like to review, I can't think of anybody better to talk to about the big trends in the gold shares. Now, as I look at these charts here, I see that gold shares have really underperformed the metal itself for a while, since maybe early 2011, most recently with the Huey Gold Bugs Index trailing gold. Why is that?
Well, there's lots of reasons. Political risk really ratcheted it up about then and through now. Political risk, is higher. A lot of politicians are getting greedier. Costs have been going higher. Mm-hmm. Now, the price has been outpacing the rise in costs, but costs are definitely going higher. There's still more of a fear environment as opposed to a greed environment. A fear environment is good for gold. A greed environment is good for gold stocks. And we're still kind of stuck in that fear environment. There's been massive share dilution by a lot of management companies, and that's the big no-no that a lot of us analysts don't like. The share dilution has been incredible. They've really diluted shareholders very badly over the past 4 or 5 years. They believe what they were doing was correct, that a lot of these assets they wanted to buy or new development projects they wanted to put into production were worth it, and maybe they were, but they financed these things by issuing shares and diluting existing shareholders. That kept shares down as well. So a lot of these things have played into, why shares have underperformed. But that's only part of the story, and that book is not fully written yet. There are many more chapters in the book of gold stocks to go yet.
So a little bit more in the fear than the greed cycle. We've got the share dilution, something I've certainly noticed. I also had not seen free cash flow from operations really take off like I thought it was going to be. You're mentioning that there's higher costs on that side, which is, I think, true across the entire mining sector, whether we're talking coal or steel or precious metals. That's something
it really is. And the gold stocks and silver stocks have been no different. These guys have developed a lot of projects. They've bought a lot of other assets. And they needed to add to their reserves. There's no doubt they needed to keep up. You know, a large producer has to add, you know, 1 million ounces a year just to maintain the same level of reserves that they had in the past. So to grow, they needed even more than that. So there's been a lot of that. So this free cash flow thing hasn't been an issue. And they haven't had much good free cash flow because of these issues. But again, how they solved that problem was by issuing more shares as opposed to, you know, growing organically or keeping a lid on costs and focusing on profit and these kinds of things.
So I'm going to guess that you're advocating that individual mileage will vary tremendously on these gold stocks, and that you're more about finding the right ones rather than investing across indexes. Is that fair, or do you have some other methodology?
Oh, absolutely. I we only would recommend buying the index, the ETF GDX, which is the gold miners index, ETF, not an index. I would only recommend buying that for someone who just really doesn't have enough money to diversify into individual stocks.
Right.
So for the very small investor, absolutely, I would buy either a good mutual fund or GDX. After that, once you have enough funds to diversify, I would definitely rather do some stock picking. And just as an example, I'm proud to say that our four best buys in big gold have outperformed GDX, three of which have substantially outperformed it. So there is a point to being picky right now. You do want to be picky with the investments that you're buying. And some will clearly do better than others, and there's many reasons for that. But the bottom line is, you want to be selective. You want to pay attention to which stocks you're owning.
Absolutely,
some will definitely outperform others.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm interested now at something you touched on, which is something I'm personally very interested to learn more about, is the idea of reserve additions. As I look out across the whole world, doesn't even matter which industry I'm looking at in the mining industry, everybody struggles with reserve depletion and mostly diminishing ore qualities. Like the fines are smaller, they're deeper, they're less concentrated than they used to be. Is that a fair characterization of gold and silver reserves at this point? And what sort of trends are you seeing there?
You're correct about that trend. It is something that is concerning. Grades are going down. The number of large ore deposits being found is declining. A lot of the bigger mines are maturing. We haven't had a real large find in this cycle. Maybe Aurelian, which was bought out by Kinross down in Ecuador, which isn't being developed, by the way. So you have a lot of issues like this where supply isn't really growing. In fact, supply is basically, flat, and the gold price has, quadrupled since 2001. So you would think that supply would be increasing. It should be increasing, and it's not. And in fact, like you point out, grades are going down. So that's the trend right now, and that's a little concerning. In the big picture, I'm not terribly worried about that. Where that's going to be an issue is if we get some kind of mania in the gold and silver, area, where supply just isn't sufficient to keep up with the demand. That would be a temporary thing, because I think in the long run, you know, technologies will increase and we'll find more gold through improved technologies and things like that. That's the big picture. But in the short term, it could be a concern, especially if we get a mania.
Interesting. So against this sort of backdrop, I note perhaps you've analyzed this, what's going on in South Africa. You know, a lot of those big mines there are very mature, very deep. They're chasing some fairly marginal grades at this point in some of those mines. Do you see, is there any chance that those strikes down there are going to take one or more producers out of the game because they were sort of at the margins of what was viable, or will this all be put behind us at some point?
Eventually, I think it gets put behind us. There is, as we talk, reason to think that, you know, a lot of these strikes are getting solved. Not all of them are. But many of them are starting to work with the workers to try to get some kind of, you know, wage that they want. It's still a live issue. It's not resolved. A lot of that, by the way, is pretty much built into the price. I don't think a lot of investors think they're going to go completely offline. South Africa, even though their production output has been in decline for years now, it's not going to go to zero, and it's not going to go away. Now, that said, I wouldn't necessarily invest there. There's just a myriad of problems with almost every imaginable problem you could think of with buying a gold stock is present in with the South African producers. So I definitely wouldn't buy there.
The big trends being there's sort of an instability, social and or political instability, plus increasing mining costs. Those sorts of factors are really starting to pinch there. There may be better opportunities elsewhere. Is that
what you're saying? I mean, they have political problems. They have power problems. They have labor problems. Mm-hmm. They have cost problems. They have profitability problems. They have growth problems. I mean, every issue you could think of is present there. So we don't own or recommend any South African producer. Definitely, you know, one issue to be aware of right now is, you know, political risk. And so the political risk is high there, so we would avoid it, you know, for that reason, among others. But you want to look for low political risk. You want to look for a company that's growing production. And that is one issue we've really focused on in big gold, is trying to find the next big producer before it becomes one and buying it now. You want to focus on a good, strong management team, and, you know, you want a strong balance sheet. So those are things we would look for in the kinds of stocks we would pick.
What, are you telling me that fundamental analysis still has a role in this computerized, high-frequency trading, technical analysis world?
That's interesting because, you know, a lot of analysts, I go with them on these trips, and they, you know, they have their models and they have their numbers that they all crunch and everything, and that's all good and that's valuable. It's insightful, but it's not the whole picture. You have to look at the whole picture right now, and, you know, trying to force a company into your model, you know, isn't the whole picture. It's like looking at just one part of the elephant. So you do want to look at everything that's involved. And probably the two most important things right now are not the property. It's not the asset. It's the people running it, and it's the political risk that surrounds it. So you want to start with those things and then look at your model and your numbers and what kind of production would be.
So people and politics in... On the people side, is there would you suggest a shortage of really high quality talent out there, or is this just you really need to find a fully mature management team that knows how to both find and run a company?
Well, on the exploration side, on the junior side, you know, you want someone who's had a degree of success, and we mm-hmm. have what we call our Explorers League, which are individuals that have demonstrated continued success. They've had at least three economic finds or more. So betting on someone who's had, you know, that level of success in the past is a pretty good bet. On the production side, you just want people that have experience, that have done what they said they're going to do. I just can't tell you how important that is. You know, there are management teams that have good goals, and you may like them, and they have a good piece of property, but if they don't follow through and do what they say they're going to do, that's a huge red flag for us. And, you know, we've been burned by that with a company recently, and we had to sell for a small loss because I just became increasingly uncomfortable with the management team and what they were doing and what they were not doing. Now, fortunately, that's the exception rather than the rule in big gold, but it is a critical component to focus on that management team and making sure that, you know, they've had either some demonstrated success in the past or they follow through and actually do what they say they're going to do.
Now, we've had a lot of people suggest to me personally and more broadly across the airwaves out there in print and other means to that gold is in a bubble. and that it's been in bubble territory for a long time, and you know, you look at its 10-year price rise, where do you think we are in the arc of gold prices at this point? Is there anything to suggest that we're in a bubble or anywhere close to one?
No.
No.
I really, years ago when this idea of gold being in a bubble first came up, I would kind of laugh at them. Now I'm getting irritated by these people. Just saying that gold's in a bubble, it's ridiculous. Did you know that the S&P doubled from its 09 low? So if the S&P has doubled in three and a half years, well, maybe that's a bubble. I mean, gold's up about 140% in the same time frame. So if gold's in a bubble, well, then the S&P's in a bubble. So these analysts and Main Street people that keep saying gold's in a bubble, maybe they need to look at their own assets and realize that, well, gee, if gold's in a bubble, then the S&P is too, and we should dump everything in the S&P. Well, that's ludicrous. The S&P's not in a, you know, bubble, and neither is gold. So a bubble really requires two things. First of all, the price has to be in a runaway mode. It has to be truly soaring. And I don't mean 30%, you know, a year. I mean 30%, let's say, in a week. Mm-hmm. I mean, the gold price doubled in 6 weeks in 1979, 1980. It doubled in 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bubble. That's a mania. We haven't had anything like that. We haven't had the internet stock craze. We haven't had the real estate craze. We haven't had anything like that in the gold market at this time around. So we're not in a bubble. And the second thing you need is you need widespread participation by the public.
Mm-hmm.
And we have not had that either. We've had nothing like that. Most reports say that, you know, what, 1% of the population owns any form of gold or gold stock. So has your taxi driver told you to, you know, to buy gold? How many friends of yours are telling you to buy gold? How many shows on CNBC do we see that are devoted to how to get rich in gold stocks, you know? So we haven't had any of that. So we're not in a bubble. Now, interestingly, I do think we go into a bubble, and that's probably going to be because of the currency dilution that just is continuing to go on. I think that forces us into some kind of inflation, and I think people run to gold as a result, and I do think we'll get a bubble in it.
You know, anybody listening to this right now, you can do the same test I will do when I have Thanksgiving with my extended family this year, or Christmas if you're listening to this later, or holidays. Just when you're at your family gathering, just poll. Find out how many people have bought investment gold in the past year. Not because their broker said, we're going to put you in a little GDX, but I mean physical position, a core position, or on their own said they want to get into gold in some way, shape, or form. And if your family's anything like mine, you will be hard-pressed to find a single new candidate to the gold club this year.
That's exactly right. And just because gold is talked about in some headlines on CNBC or whatever you might read or watch, you know, it doesn't mean that it's in a bubble. It's in the headlines just because it's making new highs. That doesn't make it a bubble.
Absolutely. Now, you touched on one of the things that's near and dear to my heart is this idea that there may be some form of a currency crisis in the future. You hinted at it. I'm going at it more directly. You said that there's, you know, a lot of currency printing and that this will lead to an inflationary event. That's one form of a currency crisis. There could be other forms out there. And one of the reasons that I do like to hold gold is because it has an embedded option value in it. And that option is this. Sooner or later, there may be a world currency crisis, not 100% chance, but some decent chance for me, 25% chance over the next 5 years, say. And if that comes to pass, we will have to come up with some sort of solution to that. And more likely than not, we'll have to revert to some form of a gold standard, not because it's ideal, but it's because the only thing we know for sure that works to balance international payments in an appropriate scale that people can trust. Yeah. So you've heard certainly Robert Zoellick talk about it as president of the World Bank, I believe. So what are your thoughts on the potential for gold to get remonetized on the international stage? Any chance of that?
I certainly think it's possible. Going to a gold standard is certainly possible at some point. And I think the forces leading us to it will grow. I think the cries for going to a gold standard will increase. Especially as we get deeper into debt, as our deficit spending doesn't get under control, as our borrowing continues to increase, all these things, and of course inflation. So I think it's very possible that there could be serious consideration for going back to a gold standard. You have many states that are saying that they're going to be buying, you know, making gold money. So you have a lot of these kinds of issues underway at this point. How it all plays out is anybody's guess. I do think it is certainly possible, and if we get to that point, gold's going to become even more valuable. The issue that could happen at that point, though, is the price could get fixed again. So my personal feeling is I hope that we have some kind of mania or bubble before then, because then that's when I'm going to sell for hopefully a huge profit and get out before they do that. So who really knows? And I'm not an economist, so it's a difficult topic for me to really comment knowledgeably on, but that's my sense for it.
So let's talk about the flow of gold then from west to east, as one a precious metals dealer described it to me. This is a gentleman out in California who does a lot of gold dealing and had noted that a lot of his biggest buyers are coming in from Shanghai, other places, and that a lot of the sellers, there was a couple of waves of selling. First, there was what he noted was sort of retail-level selling, where people were taking the dregs of what coins had been handed to them, potentially the same as the coins you got from your grandparents. And that wave went by. That was for economic reasons. But that still, that the heavy buying is mainly concentrated in the east. So we're seeing this flow of gold, as it were, going, you know, in one direction predominantly at this point in time. Do you see, what are your thoughts on those buying pressures? Will that just continue until all the gold ends up in the east? Or will we have to settle that out with a price mechanism? Or is there the possibility of let's call them capital controls being put in place at some point? How does this resolve itself in your mind?
Well, that's interesting you bring this up. First of all, the demand for gold and silver is primarily in the east already. It's only about 8 or 9% of investment demand for gold occurs in North America, and that includes Canada. 52% of demand comes from India and China alone.
Wow.
So you're looking at roughly two-thirds of demand coming from all of Asia. And again, I'm speaking of investment demand. So they already get it. They understand the role of gold, whereas a lot of North Americans don't. So by the time North Americans are buying, the price is probably already going to be a lot higher. But that could tip us over into a mania when, you know, this population here starts to see the true value of gold and silver. That could really tip us over into a mania when demand really increases. But it's already shifted, and I think that shift is A, really underway, and B, is going to continue. So now, capital controls, who knows? I think gold would have to be viewed a lot more valuable in North America than it is now before something like that would ever happen. But capital controls for our money, absolutely. Most of us at Casey Research are convinced that there's going to be some type of capital controls, you know, before this is all over. That seems almost inevitable to us at this point.
Yeah, this is not an unthinkable thought to me, because we did have a gold capital control, as it were, that happened in 1971 with the slamming of the gold window. So at the official level, the flows of gold were frozen. And so that's the essence of what I'm talking about here. But you're mentioning two-thirds of demand is already coming out of the east. There's a lot of money printing going on all across the world. There's a potential for a black swan. There's all kinds of things that fundamentally say you should own gold. Now, let's imagine for a moment that I'm listening to this, and I happen to be somebody who has no exposure to gold or silver at this point in time, but I feel like I should. How would I start?
Well, first of all, you want to focus on how many ounces you own, not necessarily looking at, you know, whether the price is $5 higher today than it was yesterday. How many ounces do you own? That's really the question you want to ask yourself, so you can focus on, you know, how much you're really going to need. And the amount really comes down to this. For me, I'm probably going to use some of this gold if we get high inflation. How are you going to protect your standard of living if we get some kind of runaway inflation? And let's say it's not a runaway hyperinflation. Let's just say it's high inflation, you know, 10%, 15%. Remember, it was 14% in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
So the odds of us getting, you know, high inflation are realistic. So if I'm going to use that gold to cover my standard of living, you're going to need about two-thirds of an ounce of gold for every $1,000 of monthly expenses if you want to protect your standard of living and not have your house be ravaged by inflation, so to speak. So that's a good guideline to follow. So if inflation lasts a couple years, well, you're going to need, you know, 15 ounces of gold for every $1,000 of monthly expenses. That's a good guideline to think about. And if your expenses are more per month, you're going to need more gold than that. If inflation lasts longer than 2 years, you're going to need more than that. But you can actually use the sales of gold and silver to protect your standard of living. You sell some gold and silver, you're going to get U.S. dollars or Canadian dollars or whatever with it, and you can use the increase in the gold and silver price to offset your the increase in the goods and services you're buying. So I think that's the way to view it and the way to look at how you're going to use it. And so the focus, again, comes back to how many ounces do you own? So if you don't have any, you need to obviously start buying. And the couple programs I would probably recommend, I really like Silver Saver. Now, the title is Silver Saver, but they do have gold as well. But they have an automatic program where they'll deduct right from your checking account and buy you gold and silver on any day of the month or week that you want. And the minimums are pretty low. It's only $50 a month or $25 a week. So I really like that program, and I use it all the time still. The other one is Hard Assets Alliance, and the minimum there is $5,000 for a purchase. So it's probably for a medium or high net worth person. But if that's you and you don't have any gold, boy, that's a really attractive program because first of all, it can all be done online. It's very simple. It's no more complicated than buying GLD. The premiums are very low, and the reason they're so low is because they actually bid your order out to a network of dealers. Anywhere from, you know, 10, 12, 14 dealers are competing for your order, so you always get the lowest price automatically in terms of premium. So the commission is very low. And then they can store it for you as well. Now, you can take delivery, or you can just let them store it, and they'll store it for you as well, and you can store it domestically or store it internationally. When you go to sell, you can do it all online and get the proceeds, you know, wired to you in a day or two. So it's a very attractive program. It actually replaces the need to even own GLD, for that matter. So, but if you don't own any, the bottom line is you need to start buying, and those are two good programs that I would look at.
Absolutely. And in the interest of disclosure, I should note here that Peak Prosperity does have a relationship with the Hard Assets Alliance, and you can find out more about that. We'll put a link at the bottom of this that you could follow. It's a great program. We are one of the founding members with Casey on that because we really like what that program has to offer. And I want to echo here that you know, the one thing that makes sense to me is that if somebody doesn't have exposure to gold or silver, but let's start with gold first, they really have to get that going. You should really have some. And I'm totally price insensitive. When I first started buying gold and silver, I got to tell you, Jeff, I was watching the price like 20 times a day and every wiggle counted, and it really mattered, and I might lose some sleep. I almost don't even track the price anymore because I set my ounces aside a while ago, and you know, I have the luxury of being, you know, heavily in the green on those. But at the same time, I no longer really care about the dollar price of gold. I care about gold tracking against all kinds of other things, and that would be gold against the S&P, gold against house prices, gold against college tuition, gold against the price of oil. On all of these bases and many more, I find that gold, all the charts, when you look at those relationships, gold is doing just fine. It's exactly where I want to be. And I know, like you, that there's going to be a day when I'm going to need to transition out of my gold holdings into something else. I don't feel we're there yet. In fact, I feel like we're still years away from that moment. In your own sense, where do you think we are in this gold story? You know, this inflation that might be arising. Do you see that? Is that something that could arise next Tuesday, or is this something really you've set your dial for several years from now?
You know, I don't have a dial set. I'm just holding gold and continuing to accumulate until it comes, because I'm personally convinced that it's going to come. So the longer it takes, the more time I have to, you know, get myself prepared for it and accumulate enough metal to make a difference. You know, I own, for my income level and portfolio size, I own a fairly high percentage of bullion. It's about 13-14%, I don't mind sharing with you. And my fear is that that's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
So Doug Casey, as you might imagine, owns a lot of gold and silver bullion. He's still buying. He's afraid he doesn't have enough. So our view is that it's going to come at some point, and it could be nasty. It may not. Let's hope it's not. But if it is, you want to be prepared. And if there was ever a time to be overweight gold and silver in a period of history, this is it.
Yep.
I mean, all the signs are there. So when does it occur? You know, who really knows? My personal sense is probably not going to be in 2013. It's probably more like 2014. But that's okay with me, because it gives me time to make sure I'm as prepared as I really want to be.
Yeah, three great points in there for me, Jeff. One is no time like the present. Second is, well, we still have the gift of time, so let's use it wisely. And then the third is around this idea of shifting baselines, meaning that if you'd taken Chris from 8 years ago and had just dropped me into my seat today and allowed me to look at what the Federal Reserve and the ECB and the Bank of Japan were doing, I literally would just jump out of my chair with my hair on fire. I would be absolutely scared witless, because this is one of the surprises to me. I never thought we could get this far into the printing game with things remaining as roughly quiet as they are. But I have this sense that it's rather like snow building up on a cornice. You know, we've been lulled into this sense of complacency. Now people go, oh, $1 trillion deficits. Oh, another $1 trillion of QE. And, you know, we can't make sense of those numbers. And at the same time, those represent to me the additional accumulation of potential energies for something that could happen. And like you, I'm really hopeful, double fingers crossed, that it's not going to be bad. But history suggests that A, it's going to happen, as there's really no way to avoid it. And B, I'm worried that the risks seem to be accumulating, not being minimized or lessened as we go forward in time. Do you share that?
Oh, what the politicians are doing is the exact opposite of what they need to be doing. We continue adding to our debt. We continue raising the debt ceiling. We continue deficit spending. We continue borrowing money. And of course, we continue printing money. We're doing the exact opposite of all the things that would lead us away from inflation. So yes, I think that's an important point. You know, what I'll add, though, is that inflation has occurred very quickly, very rapidly, very suddenly, many times in the past, just in the recent history. If you look back at the high inflationary times, just in the past 100 years here in the U.S., many of those that hit 12, 14, 15%, 2 years prior to then, the CPI was completely benign. It was 1%, 2%. I think at one point it was like 4%. And then all of a sudden, within 24 months, it was 12%, 14%. So it can happen very suddenly, and my fear is that's what's going to happen this time. People are, just like you said, they're in a lull. No one's expecting it. The CPI is low. Nothing's really happened with all this money printing. There's been no fallout. But I think that's the critical point. You can't do these kinds of things that we're doing forever and not experience any consequences. Sooner or later, there's going to be consequences to what we're doing. And my fear is that it's going to be nasty, catch a lot of people off guard, and really hurt our society. And the bottom line for me is that's why I'm buying gold and silver still to this day.
I think it's just fascinating how you put it. 2/3 of an ounce per $1,000 of monthly expenses. Think about the ounces you want to have set aside. That's your core position. Of course, then if you want to go on top of that and potentially shoot for some larger returns, if you pick the stocks in the mining territory carefully, I think you've got some great ideas there as well. I really want to thank you, Jeff, for your time today. Very illuminating. I love those ideas and for the conversation itself. How can people follow your work more closely if they want to?
It's really easy. Just go on to the CaseyResearch.com website, and you'll see the letters that we publish. I think we have something like 11 paid letters now. But the entry-level letter is a big gold. It's very inexpensive. I think it's $79 now a year. And it's a great little letter, if I don't say so myself, but it's really designed for someone who wants to initially get some basic exposure to gold and silver and to the stocks. We recommend only the producers in that letter, so there's no speculation, you know, with the juniors going on in there. We do have that, and that's our specialty in our other letters. But for this letter, very entry-level, it's a great place to start. In fact, the current issue has a discount on a gold bullion coin, and it's on a fractional gold bullion coin where you can get a significant discount that you just can't find out there in the market that we were able to negotiate with a bullion dealer where you can get a half-ounce fractional gold eagle at basically the same price as a full ounce. So
nice.
That could have a real practical purpose, for example, in the future where if you're actually going to use your gold and silver during a period of high inflation to cover some of your expenses, a fractional gold coin could be very practical. So it's those kinds of things we like to do in that letter that make me think I'm really on the right track here with what I'm bringing to subscribers.
Well, fantastic. We've been talking with Jeff Clark. Hey, Jeff, really enjoyed myself. I hope we can do this again sometime.
Very good. Glad to be here. Yes, let's do it again.